Unfiltered with Matthew Barnaby comes to you with my partners, CoolBet.com and PlayerGolf.com. I love to gamble, so why not have the most transparent sports book involved? Go to CoolBet.com to place all the bets you need. And you know I love golf and I love clothes, so go to PlayerGolf.com, PlyrGolf.com. It is the place to shop. MB36 line coming very soon. I'm so excited. Now let's get to pressing needs. I didn't think that anyone could be in the running for the most awfully run organization in the National Hockey League. I thought this was fairly simple. It's the Ottawa Senators, right? Right? Eugene Melnyk has to be the worst owner in the National Hockey League. Well, he's being given a run for his money in Buffalo, a place that is very near and dear to my heart. I'm going to bring on Mike Harrington in a little bit to really dive into some of the questions as he is around the team every single day and living in Buffalo. But I follow every team in the National Hockey League. And again, having played in Buffalo for 7 years and been a part of the organization for nearly 9 years, I know the fan base. And fuck, do I feel bad for this fan base. It's a blue-collar town that loves their Bills and loves their Sabres. Let's face it. There's not much going on in Buffalo than the Buffalo Sabres and the Buffalo Bills. And one thing that they have in common is they have the same owner, the Pegulas. I remember 9 years ago when they purchased the team, the excitement from around Western New York was unparalleled. Championship is coming. It's coming. They got the money, a man worth between $4 and $5 billion in the fracking industry of oil is going to come in and save the day. And having met Terry, having met Kim over the years, very few times, but very nice people and very dedicated to bringing that championship, or so I thought, to Western New York. They unloaded money on free agents over the years. And I can go back to Christian Ehrhoff, roughly $40 million. Ville Leino, $27 million. Not bad players. Not worth even close to those contracts. And I was told roughly 6 years ago that the shitstorm had just started. That's when it really started to unfold. It was about 6 years ago. And I was told then, you just wait. You just wait. Because we haven't even tipped the iceberg yet. We haven't even got to the shit show you are going to see in the coming years. That person will remain anonymous. That told me. And there was a multiple of people that told me that too many cooks in the kitchen, too many people making hockey decisions that should not even be remotely talking hockey. And they were talking about Kim Pegula and Terry, but mostly Kim Pegula. She has about as much of a resume to be a president and oversee hockey operations, essentially, as I would as running the United States, or being Prime Minister of Canada, or flying a jet, flying a 747. It would be like me just jumping in an airplane and saying, fuck people, jump on. I've read lots of books on how to do this. But come on. I know for a fact, and I'm going to ask Mike Harrington when he comes on to confirm it, but I had been told that Christian Ehrhoff and Ville Leino were no-goes for the previous regime, from coaching staff and mostly, and most important, the general manager. But Kim and Terry was adamant that they were going to get these two star players and give them monster contracts, and that's the way that they were going to fix things in Western New York. Throw around the money, give them the most, and we will have the best team. Well, I can tell you, I played for the New York Rangers in 01 through 04, and we paid the likes of Bobby Holik, good player, not worth $9.5 million, but we paid everyone more than everyone else. And you know what happened? We didn't make the fucking playoffs for 3 years. Didn't make the playoffs. Just because you spend the most doesn't mean you're going to have the best team. I'm going to read a stat, a very good stat. 9 years, 6 head coaches, 4 general managers, 0 playoff appearances. There's an old saying, if you go around town and you come home and you tell your wife, I met 3 fucking assholes today. Good chance you're the asshole. You don't normally meet 3 assholes. You might meet one in a week, and this guy was an asshole or a douchebag, whatever it may be. But if you meet 3 in a day, you're probably the asshole. If you go through 6 head coaches in 9 years and 4 general managers, is it all their fault? Probably not. The problem probably lies somewhere else. And where does it usually lie? Right at the top. Right at the top. Kim Pegula has done a lot of great things for Buffalo. Reviving downtown. It's a different place to go now when I visit my kids in Buffalo or go to see Sabres games in Buffalo or just visit them. When you travel downtown, it's a different spot around the arena. It's fun. It's vibrant. It's great. Now, I wouldn't say now, we're living in different times, and the team hasn't made the playoffs in fucking 9 years. So how vibrant can it really be? But she has done some good things, and I think her heart's in the right spot. But weighing in on signing free agents, Kim Pegula. You don't have the resume. I'm sorry. Jason Botterill, I'm not going to say that he deserved to be fired or didn't deserve to be fired. 3 years probably isn't enough to turn around an organization. We usually go to 4 or 5 years. And I was laughed at when I said Toronto was way ahead of the Buffalo Sabres when they hired Mike Babcock. Not laughing now, are we, people? Not laughing now, are we? And I feel bad. I wish I was wrong, because I don't cheer for teams, even though I played in Buffalo and I played in Pittsburgh. I don't care. I do cheer for fan bases, and I love Buffalo's fan base. So I feel bad that I was right, but man, was I fucking right when I said Toronto was way ahead in the rebuild that was when Babcock took over and chose Toronto. Botterill's undoing and recent firing, I'm okay with. He didn't do anything in Buffalo. And he traded a superstar, let's say a star, in Ryan O'Reilly. Now, perfect storm for St. Louis. He goes and wins the Conn Smythe MVP of the playoffs. They win a Stanley Cup, but he spoke his mind. He knew it was a shit storm. He knew it was a shit storm in Buffalo. And he was right. Kevin Adams is going to take over. and Kevin Adams does not have the resume, as much as I like the guy, to run a team in the National Hockey League yet. He has never been, I'm not going to say he's never been in any meetings, because that's not true. But you need to take steps like the Billy Garens and be an assistant general manager and a scout and be at the games and look at the amateurs and look at the pros. And I've seen Billy Garen. He did it the right way, as did Fitzgerald in New Jersey and Marc Bergevin in Montreal. It doesn't make it that you are going to be a great GM in the National Hockey League. But, man, it gives you a head start. It gives you a head start. Kevin Adams just doesn't have it. And it's going to take him a while to learn. So in 3 years, do I think he can become a great general manager? No. No, I don't. Do I think he's going to turn this thing around? No. Do I think he knows hockey? Yes. Stanley Cup champion. And great guy. Great guy. But just because you're doing my bushes outside, and you're a great person, doesn't mean I want you building my house. I don't want you doing the foundation of my house because you're a great person and a great gardener. Don't think I'm going to trust you with building the foundation of my house and pouring the cement and building it from the ground up. He's got a head start. He's got a superstar in Jack Eichel, but I don't know. I don't know. And what's even more important, the Pegula said, we're going lean. Now, we are in tough economic times right now, and I understand that. We're with the uncertainty going forward in at least the next year of maybe no fans being in the buildings. NHL is one of those, with the TV deal that they have, they need people in the stands. I get that. I get cutting costs. I get it. But going lean, they're going anorexic. They're going anorexic. They went from 21, and I have to read this. I have to read this because I've had 13 concussions or 12 or whatever it is, but this is who was let go yesterday or a couple days ago. Botterill, Sexton, Greeley, Jankowski, Crisp, Banica, Cocker, Ferner, Fingal, Halpiny, Hanch, O'Connor, Pyatt, Teasling, Wellen, Van Boxmeer, Barch, Komisarek, Miller, Taylor, Dineen, Peterson. That's who was let go in one fell swoop. That's not going lean. That's going anorexic. I hope, well, they're going to have to be doing some video scouting, it looks like, and we know how that turned out for Buffalo under former regime in Tom Golisano. You can't scout on him. You can do a little bit, but you know, it doesn't tell the whole story. Trust me, I watch a lot of games online, and when I watch them in person, it is a totally different player or what you are looking for. But this has been a long time coming, people. This just didn't happen overnight, and it's not going to change. Not in the near future. And that makes me sad for Buffalo Sabre fans out there. Kruger, I think, is a good coach. And I think the players like him a lot in hearing all the interviews. Eichel is a superstar and deserves more. The thing I fear most is going forward. And he's under contract for a long time at $10 million. But it's Jack Eichel. What happens in 3 years when this isn't turned around? Jack Eichel already has his money, and he's going to be a multimillionaire. His kids are not going to have to work. But it doesn't look like there's a plan in place. There hasn't been a plan in place since the Pegulas have taken over. What will the Sabres look like in 3 years? I'm guessing they're going to look like they do right now. Not good. Not good. Team was bought by the Pegulas for $189 million. They poured lots of money in. And you could throw all the money you want at all the guys. But it doesn't matter when at the top, it's not being run the right way. Look at the Detroit Red Wings. Look at the Detroit Red Wings. That is the model of consistency that we have had. Now, they're in a rebuild now. Let's not judge them on the last couple of years because they've had two decades of excellence. But it all started with the top, with the Iliches. The Iliches didn't tell Kenny Holland who to sign in free agency. The Iliches said, here's the money you need to have success. Clear it with us because we have to sign off on budgets and it has to be fiscally responsible. But do we think the Iliches were telling them who to pick up in free agency to Ken Holland? Not a fucking chance. Not a fucking chance. The Iliches did it the right way. And when you rebuild, you rebuild. I mean, they've had two decades of excellence. But they've always had great scouting, especially in Europe. A great general manager in Ken Holland. And at the top, they didn't micromanage everyone that was underneath them. And I think that's every great company out there. If you're micromanaging every piece of the puzzle, you're doomed for failure. And the Buffalo Sabres are doomed for failure. Because in no which way should Kim Pegula or Terry Pegula have any say in the players that they are bringing in. Stick to the business model that you have. Stick to building stuff around the arena. That's what you do best. Not telling you who's the best 200-foot player in free agency. Who's the best defenseman we can sign? Is he worth his money? You just don't know that. You don't know that. Just like I don't know how to build the Harbor Center or 716. You guys don't know hockey. You don't know how to, you don't know hockey. You know how to frack oil. You've done a great job of fracking oil. But hockey? Nope. Not happening. So Buffalo Sabre fans, I say this to you in all sincereness. I love you guys. I hope I am wrong. Once again, I hope I'm wrong from the time I said that the Toronto Maple Leafs were way ahead of you in rebuilding, because I love Buffalo. I love being a Buffalo Sabre, and I'm a proud alumni of the Buffalo Sabres. I just don't see it turning around. I just don't. Good luck. It's been a bad 9 years. Bad 9 years. They're probably the only team that right now, or organization, that if fans did come back, I don't know if they would come back. COVID might be the best thing for this organization, because I think we'd see a lot of fucking empty seats because the people I'm talking to in Buffalo, not happy, not happy. I took a few questions and people were asking me some things this week on my favorite coaches. I think it's a good time with all the general managers, all the head coaches, six in Buffalo. So I'm going to give you my top five head coaches that I had playing in the National Hockey League. And I had a bunch. Number five, Tom Rennie. Now runs Hockey Canada. He was an assistant coach and took over in an interim basis when I was in New York. But a great guy. Easy to approach. Great communication skills. And was very smart tactically. He just had to adhere to a lot of people above him. Sounds a little similar. But Tom Rennie was a great coach, even though I had him very short time. Number four, Colorado Avalanche. I got traded there, and I was only there for a playoff run. Tony Granato. Along the same likes as a Tom Rennie, a player's coach. We had a very good team, even though we dealt with a lot of injuries, a veteran-laden team, also a great GM we had there in Pierre Lacroix. The one thing we were missing right then, and they were kind of handcuffed a little bit, but David Aboshur was our goalie. I think if we had a great goalie, or even a very good goalie, we have a chance at winning a Stanley Cup. And man, do we have a great team. Tony Granato was a pleasure to play with, now at the University of Wisconsin and doing an amazing job there. Number three, God rest his soul. Absolutely love the guy, Herb Brooks. Everyone knows him and has seen the movie Miracle, seen what he did for Team USA in 1980, probably the greatest upset in sports history. But Herb Brooks is what you see is what you get. You better work hard, you better compete, or you're not going to play. And I think every player respects that. Unless you don't compete hard, then you're not going to like Herbie. But Herbie, if you're listening up there somewhere, I love you. Players love you. A great coach. Number two, I had him for 1 year in Dallas. Now the coach of the Edmonton Oilers, I think him and Kenny Holland, a super tandem. I predicted them at the start of the year that they would rebound and this would be the team to watch because of Kenny Holland and what he did in Detroit, but also Dave Tippett. He demands that you play a certain way. He demands that you compete. He demands that you are responsible defensively or you will not play. And he is loyal to players, but demands respect. And man, did I respect him. Even in the second half of the year where I didn't play a lot, I was coming to the end of my career, he was very honest, very contrite, very forthright. But Dave Tippett was a pleasure to play for the year I had in Dallas and was, I'm not going to say a player's coach because he wasn't a player's coach, but I just respected him so damn much and still do. Number one, it has to be, and he's probably the least analytically the way he approached the game. System-wise, probably the worst or one of the worst coaches I had in the National Hockey League. Fuck would you run through a wall for him? And probably having Dominic Hasek helped him as a coach because we were able to play, you know, loosey-goosey and go out there and just compete and be physical. But Ted Nolan was awesome to play for. And if you were a player like myself, you would love him. Brad May, Rob Ray, Bob Bugner. I'd say the heart and soul of that team, but obviously the Pat LaFontaines and guys that played other with skill that still competed, man, was he awesome. His speeches would he'd almost be in tears and you would just go through a fucking wall for him. But systematically wasn't great. He had Donnie Lever to do his systems, Terry Martin to do the systems. And he was a coach that we would run through the wall for you. So, Teddy Nolan, love you, man. You are number one on my list. And, yeah, Buffalo fired him as well in one of the six coaches. So, yeah, tough sledding. But those are my top five coaches. And hopefully Buffalo has one in Kruger, which all seems like they do. Players love them. Now they just have to find players that can play. My next guest and my guest today is someone that is very close, and we will go over a lot of what I just discussed in my opening monologue. But Mike Harrington, welcome to Unfiltered with Matthew Barnaby. How are you today?
Matthew, it's always good to talk to you. Yeah, it's been a little crazy around here, shall we say. You did not expect that to go down the way it did.
It's crazy. I don't think I've ever seen. I've seen a lot of shit storms in NHLs over the year. I've been a part of a few in Buffalo during the 90s. But I don't think I've ever seen off-the-wall stuff happen in 1 day or 2 days back-to-back with firings not only of the GM, but replacing with a GM that has never been even remotely part of a upper brass like this, and just the firings that go from there. Let's start with Jason Botterill. I know he's made a lot of mistakes. What's your take on the firing yesterday?
Well, you know, it was time for him to go probably, but I understand the problem people have is, hey, he only had 3 years. Well, I get it. Tim Murray only had 3 years, and sometimes you could say they're being very, very impatient. However, based on performance, the way those 3 years went, the Ryan O'Reilly trade and just the standings, it was a firing that was probably richly deserved. I thought he was going to get another year. Certainly when Kim Pegula said that 3 weeks ago, I believed her. I do also believe they had time to reevaluate when the draft was suddenly not in June and they decided to move forward. I was a little surprised because of their finances, and now they're paying Botterill and all other people not to work. But it's tough. I mean, he came in with a big rep. He was going to be the salary cap savant. He had the rings from Pittsburgh, and he just didn't get the job done. And sometimes continuity is good, but if you have the wrong guy, maybe you just have to decide you had the wrong guy.
What was the demise? I mean, the biggest thing is the Ryan O'Reilly trade, and it was a perfect storm for Ryan O'Reilly, who spoke his mind. And I have no problem in a guy speaking his mind, and maybe I always did, and I can appreciate, especially being on this side of the media, I don't like talking to guys that play in the National Hockey League because they just give you what is supposed to be told. And for once, honesty is what he brought, and Jack Eichel brought it this year at the end of clean out day and saying, you know, I'm sick of losing. Ryan O'Reilly had lost the love of the game, but he goes to St. Louis. He's a great player. Was that the start of the end for Jason Botterill right there?
Yeah, I don't think Botterill ever was able to overcome that. And I think the mistake they made, Matthew, is they should have said to Ryan O'Reilly, and Ray Ferraro said this, and it really stuck with me. Hey, we understand. We get it. We know you're frustrated. We're frustrated too. Go to the World Championships. Go to Denmark. Have a great tournament. Go home. Get ready for next season. But instead, they panicked. And they said, well, there's a real problem here. Ryan O'Reilly's the problem. Maybe they looked at their budget and said, $7.5 million is a lot of money for a guy who's lost his passion. Well, it's turned out that Ryan O'Reilly was the guy who was right. He was the one who called it out before everybody else. When he won the Stanley Cup, I'm on the ice after Game 7 last year talking to his father, and his father told me point blank, he didn't want to go anywhere. We didn't want to go anywhere. It was 3 hours away from our home. He just was calling things out. I brought him up to be truthful, and that's what he saw, and that's what he said. They made their decision. We're happy they did. We're in St. Louis now. We won a cup. But Ryan O'Reilly never wanted to force a trade. He was just saying what was on his mind, and they just panicked.
I'm going to come back to Kevin Adams, the new GM of the Buffalo Sabres, and Stanley Cup champion, a player for a lot of years. Great guy. I'm going to come back to him. But I want to start with the Pegulas up top. And I know a lot of people close to this organization. I've said some leaked out some tweets here and there. I've kept them anonymous. But I was told 6 years ago, this shit show is just starting. Trust me, this shit show is going to get a lot worse because there's too many chefs in the kitchen. There's too many people making decisions that shouldn't be making decisions. And it starts right at the top with Kim Pegula and Terry Lettinger pretty well have carte blanche. Is that where it starts? When you've had this much turnover, it has to lie on their hands.
Yeah, it really does, Matthew. But you know what? Let's not forget here. There should be no doubt they want to win. He said the first day he came here, it was about winning the Stanley Cup. He wants to win. She wants to win. They don't know how to win. They're still 9 years later trying to figure it out. Now, you referenced 6 years ago, and it's interesting. I don't know if you randomly threw that number out or if that was intentional, but it really does go back to Pat LaFontaine, and that was into the spring of 2014. And Kim Pegula was certainly central into the sudden dismissal of Pat LaFontaine, and she's been central in almost all firings for both the Sabres and, in some respects, the Bills. You know, people know she's the one who wields the axe in this organization, and people watch their backs when she walks by. No one trusts what she says. She has damaged her reputation in a lot of ways far more than Terry has at this point. It's not anything against her. No one, in my eyes, is fit to be the president of two major sports teams. And in fact, she's serving that role for the Amerks and all these other teams. Russ Brandon wasn't fit to be the president of two teams either. You can't be the president of an NFL team and an NHL team. It's not possible. You can't do it. And in this case, put a veteran hockey person in the president's role. Now, especially, you have your third straight rookie GM, and you still haven't given him anyone veterans to help.
It's mind-boggling, and I'm going to Kim Pegula. And these are terrific people. I've met them, and very – the love for Buffalo and wanting to win, like you said, is there. Kim Pegula.
Genuine.
Kim Begula has as much a resume to be a president of the Buffalo Sabres, and I'm going to talk Buffalo Sabres, Buffalo Bills as well, but I'm going to say Buffalo Sabres, as I do to be a pilot of a 747 going to Europe, carrying lives of hundreds of people. She doesn't have the resume. I mean, to be able to oversee this kind of thing, just like Kevin Adams doesn't have the resume to, I guarantee his phone is going to ring off the hook. I mean, trying to make a trade with him, trying to get anything he can, because that's what veteran people do. And if you don't know who the fish in the room is in the first 15 minutes, you're probably the fish. So they're going to try to figure out who the fish is. As for Gibb, how does she answer the questions? Because you see them, and I know they don't talk all this that often, but how does she answer the questions when the question is posed? What are your qualifications to run two major franchises, and especially the Buffalo Sabres?
Well, and I kind of tried to broach that with her yesterday, but it's a Zoom call, so they cut you off and they don't give you any follow-up, and she didn't answer the question about, you know, the perception that she's the number one problem in the organization. But, you know, Matthew, she has skills. She has acumen. She has business acumen. I mean, we see it every day. You drive by Harbor Center, it's a $200 million facility that has done tremendous things for downtown Buffalo. It is mostly her idea and her design. Terry wanted to build a practice rink like the Capitals have. It was Kim Pegula mostly who came in and said, let's build a hotel and a giant restaurant. And so that really is a lot of her handiwork. Those are the kind of things she can do. I think her strength is going to lie in someday getting renovations done in the arena, getting renovations done or a new stadium. She's going to be central to that cause for the Bills. That's her strength. She should stay to her strengths. Her strengths right now have not proven to be great people skills, and they certainly haven't proven to be involved innately in the hockey operation of the Buffalo Sabres. I don't understand, other than the fact that she's the owner, so they can do what they want, it's their team, she's in the way, she's in the wrong spot, she should stay to what she does well.
True or false, because this is what I was told a long time ago, and we're years removed from it, but two disaster signings were Christian Ehrhoff and Ville Leino. I was told the GM at the time did not want those signings, or was not really wanted to pay that kind of money. Was interested, but not for that kind of money. And that the Begulas were the ones that said, these are two guys that we have to have, and we will overpay for them. True or false?
100% true. And in fact, the Sabres revealed that the next season, when they started the year in Europe, they did something for their website, and they showed the Pegula kids on the steps of some, you know, public monument in Helsinki, Finland, and they were talking about how Dad watched the Stanley Cup final last year, and all he wanted to talk about was Christian Ehrhoff, Christian Ehrhoff, Christian Ehrhoff. It was 100% true that those two signings were made by Terry Pegula, and that really started them down a bad road, and it showed their view was you could just throw money at everything and fix it. It doesn't work that way.
It doesn't work. It works through the draft, and now we're going to be coming up with the draft after the NHL playoffs are there. The Sabres, for the ninth year in a row, will not be partaking in that, but we're going to go into the draft. Now, not only has the GM been changed, how does Kevin Adams handle this draft coming up with a lot of the scouts that have done all their due diligence for a very important draft for them, but also the prospects? All the Rochester coaches are gone now, so how does he attack where they are going from here, being disappointed? I heard he had lots of phone calls yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to have to rebuild everything. And you're right. I think people say, oh, who's going to want to work for the Buffalo Sabres? Well, you know what? People are going to want jobs at the NHL. They're going to want jobs in Rochester. He's going to hear from people. But I think it's just a clean sweep. Some of it is money. I think the Pegulas want to spend less on salaries and coaching and scouting development. And they want to have a different view. I think there was a feeling in Rochester, Chris Taylor, they may have been looking to win more at the expense of development. They're not going to have $700,000 veterans in Rochester anymore, it seems. So they're going to be taking a different development model down there at the NHL level. I don't know. We don't know how do we know what kind of GM he's going to be? Is he going to trade a lot? Is he going to move guys around? You know, is he going to favor younger guys? It just remains to be seen. But that's the mystery of it. A guy who's never really been in hockey ops at all is suddenly the GM.
It's absolutely mind-blowing. Like, I love Kevin. He is a great guy, like I said, but you're being thrust into a job that it's a necessity that you learn going up. Sure. I think I can coach in the NHL just because I know the game and I've coached at a level, and I believe I'm a smart hockey guy. I believe I can. Do I believe I could be a GM right now? Hell no. There's just way too much that goes into it that I just don't think Kevin is prepared for. The Sabres, we know they have trouble depth scoring. We know they have a lot of young D. They have a lot of pieces that they could move. But if it's going to be a team, and I believe Dylan Cousins makes the jump to the NHL when they do come back this year, I think he is ready. Yes. But you look at the Casey Middle stats and the other prospects that they have, what's the biggest hole in that lineup if they are going to be a playoff team next year and not miss for the 10th straight season?
Well, you know what? You're right. They have to get their depth fixed. You know, they have a first line. They have a legitimate first line. They had a legitimate NHL fourth line this year. They didn't have a middle six at all. They didn't have more than one and a half pairs of D. They didn't have reliable goaltending. So there's a lot of holes here. To me, they weren't necessarily as far away as people think. You know, the penalty kill hurt them all year. Here's a stat for you, Matthew. What was the Sabres' power play in November? It was one for 37. How many games did you lose in a month going 1 for 37 on the power play? At 5-on-5, they improved quite a bit this year. Here's another stat for you. What was the goaltender's save percentage on the penalty kill? It was 840. Not 940, yeah. 840.
You
cannot win with numbers like that. You know, and they won a lot of games against some good teams, but they just had a couple areas that really sunk them. And those were things that Kruger and Kevin Adams have to work on this year coming up. Kim Poole is right. This isn't a total rebuild. They're not that far away, but they still got to find those extra pieces and get more depth on this club. And that's what Jack Eichel said, more depth and more veterans.
Jack Eichel was incredible this year. They signed Jeff Skinner, and he had him by the balls. Like, hey, you did what any smart guy would and any great agent would when you have a team and you have all the leverage. Life is about leverage. I don't care if you're a writer, you're a podcaster, you're a government worker, whatever it may be. You got leverage. You do right. Something that they need. He had leverage. He cashed in. Do you think that deal ends up at the end? I mean, it wasn't a great first year under the deal, but that's a tough deal to live under, especially if he isn't playing with the likes of Eichel, because he needs a facilitator, a guy to get him the puck.
You know, I'm just baffled. I mean, he became a 14-goal scorer. I mean, after scoring 40, and you gave him $9 million? You gave him $72 million. Okay. Did you sign Jeff Skinner to an 8-year, $72 million deal with the understanding your coach was not going to play him with Jack Eichel? I don't get it, you know, and that's what Kruger did. And Kruger's stubborn, and we saw it this year. He had stubborn streaks. He didn't adjust on the power play. He didn't adjust in the PK. He wouldn't play Skinner or Eichel. I don't get it, you know. And if you're not going to play Skinner with Eichel, then why did you sign him to that contract? Why didn't you let him go? What are you going to do with him now? You can't have him playing that kind of hockey and that making that kind of money, scoring 18 goals a year. It's going to be Kyle Okposo times three, you know, in terms of the value you get back. So I just think they have to figure out, to me, the mistake they made. Maybe they were going to do it in March. We'll never know. The season ended. To me, I would have put Sam Reinhardt in his own line. You got to figure out if you're going to pay him, and I would have put Skinner with Eichel and just let it run and see what happened. But they went a couple times with Skinner, Eichel, Reinhardt, and now we don't know if Sam Reinhardt can drive play his own way, and they're going to maybe throw him $6 or $7 million. So it's really a mess, but it comes back to, boy, that Skinner contract, that looks like that could be a killer. That could be way worse than Okposo, and the O'Reilly contract, I don't think it was going to be bad because he's a good player, but geez, that guy is going to have to score 35 goals a year to make that worth it.
Well, the thing is, O'Reilly, if he doesn't score, he does so many things well. He takes faceoffs well. He's so dependent. He's reliable. Both ends of the ice. Jeff Skinner doesn't score, he's going to be cast for the ghost. You don't see him. He doesn't do anything else except for score goals.
And Ralph Kruger wouldn't – I'm sorry, Matthew. Ralph Kruger wouldn't even put him on the ice in overtime. I mean, this is the guy you paid all the money to. And, well, he's not defensively responsible. Well, you know what? I get it. I get it. In 3-on-3, you can't be giving the puck away. But if you paid him all that money, you got to try him once in a while, see if he can score some goals. He did that a couple times for Housley last year during the 10-game winning streak. But it's just baffling the way he was used.
First power play unit would be nice for a guy making $9 million there as well. It usually goes hand in hand. Usually highest paid guys are your best players are usually out on the first power play unit. At least that's what we did in New York. Didn't work for us in New York. So we had too many chefs in the kitchen there as well in my tenor there. Lastly, before we let you go, I just want to ask you about Casey Mittelstadt. Do you think he makes that step? What do you see for him long-term? He's a skilled guy, undersized, but a skilled guy. And he's had some success, at least leading into coming from the World Juniors and the fan base in Buffalo. It's got to be, I absolutely love the fans there. Blue collar. They love their Sabres. They love their Bills. But it's a fan base that has to be eerily disappointed, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, people are just, they're blown away right now. They don't know what to do. You know what? And I think Mittelstadt's a guy who was really put in a bad spot. I think that hastened the trade of O'Reilly. We got Casey Mittelstadt to be the number two center. Well, he was a kid. And I know they got snookered a little by how good he looked in the World Juniors here, but that was another reason the trade happened. I think now you've got to hope Casey Mittelstadt can become a solid number three center in the NHL. Your number two spot is still open this year. Maybe you make a trade. You know, can you get a guy for Brandon Montour to be your number two center? I don't know. Are you thinking Dylan Cousins is your number two center? Well, you're going to make the same mistake, I think, that you made in Mittelstadt, although Cousins seems to be a little better and he's bigger, which would help. They still are going to have that hole. And, gee, Matthew, they had a pretty good number two center around here, didn't they? And they traded him for Berglund and Sobotka and Tage Thompson. And, I mean, you're never going to get me away from that point as the moment that Botterill went off the rails and could never get it back.
I say this in every single trade, especially trade deadline day or at the draft. Whoever is getting the better player in the deal, in 95% of the time, they win the trade. Because sure, I can go to free agency. I can get a Berglund off this tree. I can get a Sobotka off this tree. I can get any of those guys at any point in time. I can't go to a tree. There's not an O'Reilly tree where you pull them with players that good, because it's like in quarterbacks in football. There's a reason why number one quarterbacks stay on a team for so long, because there's only so many good ones out there. It's hard to get a number two center, and Dylan Cousins won't be a number two next year. He might be in the future, but he won't be there next year.
I mean, you know, you look at Drury and Briere. Teams don't let their guys go to free agency and lose them anymore. So you've got to develop those guys. You get lucky in a trade and somebody develops you don't expect. You don't hand over a guy like Ryan O'Reilly to the St. Louis Blues like they did. So, I mean, it's a situation now where they're always chasing that mistake. They're still hoping it's Dylan Cousins. But you're right. Dylan Cousins can't be the number two center next year unless we get really surprised.
Oh, hey, he looks really good. He plays the part. I watched him in training camp. Yep. He's a big guy. I think he could develop into that number two center, but it's a tough league, man, to come in at 18 years old. There's very few Jack Eichels and Connor McDavids and Sidney Crosby that can walk in and be a legit top six forward in the league. Mike, you never throw lob balls to them in Buffalo. That's why I had to have you on today. Great job reporting with them. Keep up the awesome work, and thanks for coming on today. I really appreciate it.
Matthew, always a pleasure. Take care. Be safe.
All right. See you, buddy. Thanks, Mike. Unbelievable stuff from Mike Harrington. He's an unbelievable beat reporter for the Buffalo News. A lot of guys throw little lob balls and just try to stay on the good side of owners and coaches. Don't like to cause a lot of rift, but the good ones, the Bucky Gleasons, to me, God rest his soul, Jim Kelly in Buffalo, even though where I didn't agree with them all the time, they ask the tough questions and they demand answers for the people that they have to cater to, the listeners, the readers. So Mike Harrington, keep doing what you do. Even though they might not answer all your questions, we can read in between the lines. And like I said earlier, this is a fucking schmozzle. A schmozzle is somewhere in between debacle and colossal disaster. It's a fucking schmozzle in Buffalo. And it's not going to change. That's all I got today. I just want to say thank you again to my partners from coolbet.com and playergolf.com. Go to coolbet.com as sports are starting to come around. We got PGA, we got UFC, basketball, and of course, hockey are coming back. The most transparent sports book out there. Easy to cash your money in when you need it. A lot of sports books, you can get your money in. They make it real easy to get your money in, but really hard to get your money out. And Player Golf, I have my line MB36 coming very soon. I love to play golf. I like to look good on the course. So you guys are going to love that. Go to PLYRgolf.com for all your golf needs. And as always, you can go to my website, MatthewBarnaby36.com, to watch the live video of this podcast, or you can go to Spotify or Apple. Enjoy, have a great week, and we will talk to you very shortly. Sayonara. Whatever you